Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number. The Twitter feed is where to be today, especially the Twitter feed of our own Tony Connolly and Arlene Foster and Sammy Wilson. Tony tweeted there 22 minutes ago exactly. You heard it with Claire on the 1 o'clock. Two senior EU sources say the main stumbling block to a deal has been removed, with the DUP accepting the latest proposals on consent. There's now optimism a deal can be done. 10 minutes ago, Arlene Foster, the leader of the DUP, tweeted. Now, this is quite nuanced. EU sources are talking nonsense. That's the typical DUP start to every sentence. Discussions continue. There needs to be a sensible deal which unionists and nationalists can support. That's an interesting line from the DUP. There needs to be a sensible deal which unionists and nationalists can support. So no talk of a veto there. And then Sammy Wilson was in full very high blood pressure this morning, if you've seen him on any of our screens. And he was then articulated in a tweet what was flowing through his arteries. The GFA, Good Friday Agreement, requires cross-community consent for all controversial issues passing through the Assembly. UK and EU negotiators who have ad nauseam pontificated about the need to respect the agreement have no business interfering in the processes for consent as currently set out. So the Good Friday Agreement, he says, requires cross-community consent. So that's definitely, with Boris Johnson's pirouetting, an image in itself. He's doing so many U-turns at the moment, including Stephen Barclay saying on his behalf that on Saturday with the special extraordinary sitting of the House of Commons, if there's no deal, he will, even though he's said, I'd be found dead in a ditch, I'd rather die in a ditch than look for an extension, but that he will send a letter looking for an extension. But he would say, of course, that the reason I'm not writing the letter, it's my handwriting, but my hand is being held by Parliament, which is out of touch with the people. But anyway, fascinating developments. Any more developments, we will let you know in the next 75 minutes. Now, we've been talking for the last few days, including with Damien yesterday, about people being shunned, that awful word, by their families in many cases, because of their religious beliefs and indeed because of their absence of a religious belief when it came to the Jehovah Witnesses. If you left the Jehovah Witnesses, you are shunned, you are disfellowshipped. Your family will not talk to you in any shape or form. And we heard on Monday from a woman that got married, Rachel got married last Tuesday, yesterday week, and her family didn't come, including her mother and her daughter, two generations, because Rachel had left the Jehovah Witnesses. Now, Joanne has contacted us. Joanne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Now, it's a different form of shunning, but people might be more familiar with this, unfortunately, in Ireland. What happened, Joanne?
Well, I got pregnant, and that was shame enough for my family. Mm-hmm. But my marriage lasted a very short length of time.
Okay.
I came home one evening to our home, and there was a note left for me. Our baby was 3 months old at the time.
Right.
And the note stated, I'm gone. So sorry. Send money when I can.
And
my immediate reaction was to head back to my mother and father's home.
And that note was in the handwriting of your husband?
That's correct.
Your husband of... How long had you been married at that stage?
11 months.
11 months, okay. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he's gone.
I picked up the baby and headed back in home.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't met with open arms. I was met with making a show of us again. They allowed me to stay there for 6 months.
Yeah.
I couldn't say the brothers and sisters were encouraged to be nasty, but they weren't discouraged. Mm-hmm. If my daughter woke up during the night, there was a big issue about it. Younger brothers and sisters were allowed to comment on it. And anyway, I ended up getting a deposit together and moved into a flat down the town.
Okay. Now, did they... Like, your husband left you?
Yes.
And did they blame you?
Well, didn't care. It was just that we were the family was going to be spoken about again.
Hmm.
And, it, you okay. know, it, as far as they were concerned, I'd already brought shame to the house by getting pregnant.
Yeah.
You know, a year before that.
Yeah.
And here again, the family would be the focus of a small town again.
Yeah.
Now, Joe, this was in 1988.
Wow. Yeah.
So I can only feel for the women before me.
So you got...
And I don't believe for a second that I'm on my own here.
Yeah. So you got a place of your own and your daughter...
Yes. My family were quite good to me during that time. When they got over the initial brunt of the situation, you know,
mm-hmm.
they would babysit for me and I used clean houses and stuff, and if I couldn't bring my daughter, she was sick, they would help out.
Okay.
But it all changed about 4 years after I went out. My friends coaxed me into going out.
Yeah.
And I hadn't been out in 4 years.
Oh, God.
And it was Christmas time.
Yeah.
And I met this man.
Great.
And he asked me out for to his Christmas party.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I had to tell my parents that I was going to a Christmas party with a man.
Mm-hmm.
And he had also was also separated and from the same town.
Yeah.
So when I was asked what his name was, mm-hmm. uproar ensued.
My God, okay.
And I was told that I was no longer their daughter. To get out, my daughter was welcome, but I wasn't.
And are these the words of your mother and your father, both of them?
No, just my father.
And what did he say?
My mother claimed in years to come that she wasn't in the house and she wasn't aware of what happened.
Okay.
But for the preceding 15 years, she never bothered to speak to me either. So I don't really care whether she was in the house that day or not.
And what did your father say to you that day when you said you had met
someone?
That's
exactly what he said to me. He said to me that they already knew mm-hmm. it was a small town. The word had got to them before I got there. And I was no longer welcome. Get out. You're no longer our daughter. Your daughter is welcome here, but you're not.
So we have no daughter?
Yes. Now, that continued on for 10 years.
As you keep pointing out, you live in a small village. They found out. Oh, it's not funny. They found out almost before you did you were going out with this man, which is
absolutely,
wonderful
yeah.
development in your life after 4 years of not having that company. But if it's a small village, how can you not see each other or be with each other for 10 years
it's not
at least.
A small village, it's a small town.
Small town,
I lived at one end of the town, they
yeah.
lived at the other end of the town. No, we did see one another from time to time, and I would, the way it worked was, I still brought my daughter to their house.
Okay.
The door would be left open, she would go in and the door would be shut, and when I would go to collect her, the child would be either standing outside or the door would be open and the child would come out when I'd stand at the doorway.
So no one would come out for a chit-chat.
No.
Well, you should have been brought into the house, but...
No.
And would you bump into them, the local supermarket, petrol station, church?
Yes, I would. I'd see them from time to time, but I felt totally ashamed. And if I could get an exit route, I felt that I had been labelled the family slut. And I wore that label for many years.
Oh, my God.
So, out of shame, I would... practically hide. If any of them were around, I skedaddled, as it were.
If you saw them coming, you'd slip into a doorway or slip out of their way or
go the opposite way, yep.
And
sorry, Joe, I haven't relived this in a long time. I was talking to your colleague there yesterday morning, and
yeah.
I got upset about it as
yeah.
well.
And
it's something that you kind of pack
yeah.
at the back of your mind.
But just that image that you've articulated so well of you having to take the initiative and slipping out of their sight. When you shouldn't, when you shouldn't, you did nothing wrong whatsoever.
Yeah. And the killing part of it was that it extended to aunts and uncles as well. The man that I met, the gorgeous man that I met, was sitting having a well-earned pint in the pub one night, and an uncle. Now, Joe, I would have met him maybe 19 or 20 times in my life, maybe once a year.
Yeah, yeah.
And this guy arrived down from Dublin on one of his yearly visits. Knew my husband from, my now husband from years ago, was informed about him. And he went up to him and he said to my now gorgeous husband, you're given his name, and my husband said yes.
Yeah.
And he said, at the time you could smoke in a pub. He said, you think you're a big man sitting there and out with your 20 major and your big pint, don't you? Well, I'm going to ask you a question. What happened in your marriage?
What?
And my husband said to him, my now husband said to him, the person that needs to know knows.
Yeah.
I had aunts and uncles that did the exact same thing as my main family did.
They shunned, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, would you, Joanne, would you meet them at events where both of you were invited, a wedding or...
Yeah, okay. So much madness went on. I had brothers and sisters that never spoke to me, and the next thing, when one of them was getting married, you get a wedding invitation. And I went to my brother's wedding. My partner wouldn't be asked. He was only my partner then. Myself and my daughter, and I went to one. And towards the end of the evening, I saw that my mother was sitting on her own just for a few minutes.
Yeah.
I thought, I'll go down, I'll be the bigger person, and speak to her.
Yeah.
Sat down beside her, and she, well, I didn't actually get to sit down because as I went to sit down, she said to me, get up out of there, you. My cousins are coming in here shortly.
To her own daughter.
Yep.
No wonder it's still upsetting. I mean, you mentioned, you know that image as well, Joanne, of you arriving up to drop their grandchild, your beautiful daughter, to see their grandparents, and the door would be open, and but just be darkness, there'd be no one at the door, and she'd slip in, and then you collect the same image. Did your daughter ever say, "Mammy, why does Nanny not come out to you, or why does Grandad not?"
No, she did when she was 14.
Okay,
and she was in second year. It dawned on her, and she, well, maybe it had before then. She was never allowed to mention. I've only discovered this as we got to talk about the situation. You see, Joe, I always felt that friends of mine used to say to me, "You're absolutely mad to bring her up to that house," but I felt that it wasn't her argument.
Yeah.
I wanted her to have a relationship with her grandparents. She had lost her father. Well, she had a broken relationship with him when he eventually came back. And but it's something that I regret now, because I should have known that at some stage she was going to ask a question.
Yeah.
And she did when she was 14. She said to me, "Mummy, why don't you go to Granny's? And why am I not allowed to mention..." I won't say his name because it would identify things. And I had to sit down and tell her. Now, she, after that, she was very reluctant to go back up there. You know.
Because she's,
because she loved me.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
And it burst her bubble. I wouldn't recommend it to anybody to keep children going, because eventually their hearts are going to be broken one way or the other.
Yeah, but you did what you did, Joanne, and you can't play God. And maybe as time goes on, your daughter, obviously she's older than 14 now. I don't know what age she is now. But as time goes on, I think she might thank you for being so generous and for rising above rather than going below, which is what you wanted to do. Don't be hard on yourself. No, there's no reason to be hard on yourself. And by the way, your gorgeous darling husband, as you keep warmly referring to him, this mystery uncle that we saw as often, it seems, as the Pope in Ireland, once a year he might drop down. Did he separately know your gorgeous darling husband, as you call him, and did he have a beef with him over something?
No. It was just about me. That was it. You know?
And what about when, well, and that happens in all families, grief, illness, upset, accidents, you know, those trauma?
Mm-hmm.
Would there be any unity around trauma, around illness?
Yes, well, now you mention it. I was sick 3 times during that shunning.
Yeah, shunning, yeah.
And at one stage I had an operation in Beaumont Hospital. Woke up and I was surrounded by my family.
Wow. What did you...
One of my sisters said to me, you probably want to say, get the F out.
Yeah.
Of here.
Yeah.
So I was kind of delighted. But little did I know that as soon as I was well, no one, they were all gone again.
And when you...
I don't know whether it was the drama of maybe I die or they wanted to be... I don't really know what the hell it was about.
And they were all around the bed as you came out of the anaesthetic?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you thought this was a turning point?
And it I
was,
did, yeah.
But it wasn't, you know, it wasn't to be.
Then there were other times. I was in a shop one day and a man came up to me and he said to me, you know, your father collapsed today. You know, how is he? And I started to cry. Sure, I hadn't a clue.
Yeah.
But anyway, the following morning I got up and he was in hospital, obviously. I found that out through people in town and which hospital. And I walked for a couple of miles around on a walk, and crying, trying to decide what I'd do.
Yeah.
So I decided I'd bring my daughter and myself down to see him. He spoke to my daughter and ignored me in his hospital bed. And I thought to myself, geez, Daddy, do you know what? You're going to make it. Because I don't believe that anyone that would be seriously dying would be so hard.
Could magic up that level of complexity that he could sit there and talk to his grandchild while studiously avoiding his own daughter.
Yeah.
In his hospital bed. And he did recover, obviously, I presume.
Oh, he did, yes.
Yeah. But you also mentioned, by the way, Joanne, you mentioned it to me earlier on, almost as an aside, that they used to come down when your daughter, when you were working, cleaning houses, mm-hmm. and your mm-hmm. daughter was sick. Does that mean you brought your daughter with you when you were working?
I did, yes. I had, well, I shouldn't say it, I was on loan parents.
Yeah,
but
of course.
No, when you're paying out 80% of your money on rent.
Rent, yeah.
And that's another story, Joe. The reason that I was paying 80% rent was that I had to prove to social welfare that I was a deserted wife. And but for the fact that I kept that note, they challenged it. So for a couple of years, I had no money.
Yeah.
And I had the same battle with the community welfare officer at the time as well. So when you're paying 80% of your money on rent... You know, I bought an old bike and I had bicycle seat on the back of it, and she came with me on the cleaning jobs.
My God. What a mother. What an incredible that you're juggling. Talk about multitasking and working to the bone, Joanne. And then the only time you couldn't bring it, obviously, which is the thing that struck me earlier on, to the minder when you're sick, but then that's obvious you did take her with you because you had to. Now, what's happening now?
As I say, I would have got sick 3 times, and a couple of years ago I was sick through the small town, Asian Third. Contact was made again.
Yeah.
But you know what, Joe? There was 3 or 4 years there where I even went to my mother and father's home.
Mm-hmm.
But when I went back into that environment, you know what? Faraway fields were green. And I decided that I didn't want to be part of it anymore.
Okay.
I have a mother that has serious problems. I had just idolized the whole thing in my head. And little did I know that I was probably way better off.
Yeah. And did that wisdom come from yourself, or did you talk to somebody, or did it come from you?
No, I would have suffered from depression mm-hmm. over the years, and counselling was recommended to me.
Yeah.
But I went to a marvellous counsellor. I couldn't say a word about the woman, yeah. except that I was not ready for it.
Okay.
And I cried for 2 days, had a big swollen face and a massive headache for 3 days. And maybe now I could go to counselling, but that was not my time.
Okay. Yeah. And do you believe that the positions adopted by your parents, and indeed your siblings, and it's influenced by your parents, do you think that was propelled by religion or just their own personalities?
Oh, absolutely, religion. And all you have to do is, I think religion is behind all the mother and baby homes, the nudging and the winking when a young one got pregnant, and the attitude to girls.
Yeah.
As opposed to fellas having sex outside of marriage. I think it was all down to Catholicism. And, the Jehovah's Witness may get up and say, we're shunning you, barefaced say it. But I think there was a more discreet way of handling things from Catholics and maybe Protestants as well, because they had their own history of mother and baby
exactly,
home too.
Yeah, and in England as well. But did you ever come across a priest? Like, did the institution of the church have this position? Do you follow me?
No, I wouldn't be religious, and I don't go to mass or have anything to do with. There was a survey or something once at my door.
Okay.
And the way they do Stations of the Cross country places?
Yeah.
I would have said to the priest, look, I'm not interested. I have had a bad experience
mm-hmm.
with the Catholic Church, and they don't really want to know.
No. But would a small town, would the clergy in a small town know of the rift and try and heal it? Do you follow me?
Well, they never contacted me anyway.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Now you were, Joanne, from what you say, your dad has had a few health scares.
Mm-hmm.
At the prospect, and you cried when you heard from a stranger, well, from a mutual, but not a family member, that your father had collapsed, and you were deeply upset, obviously, immediately and evidently. If another milestone comes, i.e. if they pass on,
mm-hmm.
where will that send you in terms of?
Well, I've given that a lot of thought, and I used to think, well, if I don't make the effort, I'm going to be the one left behind and saying maybe I should have. But I did try. I tried over the 3 or 4 years that we were talking to speak to my mother and father. And Joe, there was no point.
Okay.
As far as they're concerned, they'd be right. And that's it.
Now, you used that phrase earlier, which triggered a lot in you, that this they portrayed you as the SLUT in the family.
Yes.
But surely in any family, Joanne, people are faced with different situations. There's no way in any circumstances anyone is an SLUT. But in any family, people can have difficulties, money difficulties. Would they take such a harsh, cold, cruel position on anyone else in the family who something different happened to?
Joe, I have a sister who has left the family as well.
Yeah.
And she gave me, she was 16 years of age when she knocked on my door, and she said to me, I don't know why I don't talk to you. I just know I wasn't it. She was a younger sister.
Yeah.
And that girl said that she was raped.
Okay. Well, we won't
right?
go down. Yeah, but don't say anything else about it. But,
yes.
Okay, say there, Joanne, because you're Just a sample of what people are thinking is Reverend Dave Sims, 51551. David, you're listening to Joanne. This happened in Ireland in 1998 and has gone on ever since. David, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. It's unbelievable that this sort of thing should happen in Ireland at any time. You've got to... Christianity is based on forgiveness. It's based on love. And the one thing that sprung to mind when I heard what that lady was saying was that he who is without sin cast the first stone.
Yeah.
None of us are perfect. We all do things in our lives that we regret, that are wrong. She's an extremely brave lady. She has done everything right. And she deserves to be shown solidarity by people who really are Christians. You know, this is absolutely outrageous. It really is. I mean, you look at the recent changes in this country, like with same-sex marriage, all of the referendums that have been passed. And you sort of feel, isn't this a great little country now? Haven't we done well? But then something like this comes up and you really are made think again, you know?
Joanne, is it... I'll stay there, David, please.
Okay.
Joanne, is it appropriate to ask you, what would you say to your mother now? Is it beyond reconciliation? Because you have, in that sense, you've put a frame on it, you've tried to come to terms with it, you've reminded yourself and keep reminding yourself that it's not your fault, it's not your doing, you are the victim here in every sense of the word, but have come on with a beautiful husband and beautiful daughter and a good life, hopefully. But what would you say to your mother, if anything?
I don't think my mother wants to hear from me. In fact, I know she doesn't.
Okay.
A year ago, an in-law died. And both of us were at the same funeral, obviously. And my mother was sitting in a church seat. I didn't see her.
Yeah.
Myself and my husband sat into the same seat. There was a big gap between us.
Mm-hmm.
Then another sister came in and sat between us, if you like. My mother said to her, I want out of here. She got up and moved four seats up in the church. That was only last year, Joe.
And when she said, I want out of here, was that within earshot of other people?
Yes, and I was questioned by people after, was everything not right there again? And, you know, it's embarrassing. Mm. I've tried to talk to my mother. My mother suffers, as far as I would be concerned. I'm not a psychiatrist, but from a condition called gaslighting.
Yeah, yeah.
She started at a very early age with all of us.
Gaslighting
in
comes.
If we were getting ice cream and peaches, my brother would get four. We might get one. Do you know that kind of way?
Yeah.
Brothers, sisters, she has. This is the way one of my sisters that I've been talking to recently have got back in contact with and sent to speak to now and again describes it. She says, Mommy has the A team, the B team, and Margaret's on the C team there on her own.
That's absolutely crazy.
And when you say gaslighting, you've been gaslighted, it's a phrase which is around a lot now. I was looking it up the other day. It comes from a movie in the 1930s where a husband set out to try to convince his wife that she was going mad. In other words, undermine her all the time. And the way he did it was he kept reducing the gaslighting in the house. So she'd say it's getting darker and he'd say no. But that's it. So did she set out to undermine you all the time. Mary,
when I was going back into that house for a short length of time, I'll explain this to you now. She would open the door and if none of the A-team members were in the house, I would get, oh, Joanne, come in. I'd put on the kettle.
Okay.
If the members were inside in the house, I'd get, Oh, Joanne, come in.
Yeah.
Do you see the difference in
Of course I do. You've done it brilliantly. Yeah. You've done it brilliantly. Brilliantly.
Yeah.
Joanne, stay with us. Dave, stay with us well, and have Mary, you want to talk to after the break. 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Joanne has contacted us, not her real name. She's been explaining to us. We've been talking about shunning and religious shunning and different religions, but this takes on a different cape, so to speak, a different frame. She was married for 10 months when her husband left her. He left a note saying, "I'm gone, I'll try and send you money." He left her. He left Joanne with her three-month-old baby. She returned home and the family said, "You have not only shamed us once, you've shamed us now twice," for some reason. And then she's been effectively shunned by the family ever since. Mary, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe.
You're listening to Joanne.
Yeah, I was in tears there, Joe, just listening to her. Especially when she said about putting her little girl up on the bike and going to work. And it's just the struggle. But I suppose it's not my own family, but my in-laws, my ex-in-laws now. But I've separated from my husband. I was married for 10 years. I have three young children.
Okay.
And they've never made contact.
And do you see them? Do you come across them? Is there occasions when you would meet?
No. I would see them maybe in the distance in the filling station or something, but I haven't had any contact and no one has ever contacted me to see was I okay or what happened.
Yeah.
Why did we break up? We were married for 10 years, together for 20.
Yeah.
And I've been in and out of that house as, you know, as you get to know people.
So you had a lot of contact with them, Mary?
Oh, I had a lot of contact, yes. But and completely as if I didn't exist.
Yeah.
My children are brought to visit probably once a month or... I'm not sure do I like it, though, because they're probed when they're there as well, so...
Hard. What do you mean they're probed? What about your life?
Yeah, little things. God. Now, the kids are young, but they'd say the odd thing. And
Yeah.
So it's...
And how have you coped, Mary?
I, just when Joanne had said that she wasn't ready for counselling, I hit a wall and I was I was admitted to hospital with panic attacks.
Okay.
And that the week that happened, I started counselling.
Okay.
And once a month since for the last 2 years, I've kept that up. And it has saved me. It really has. I can't emphasise enough. And what she's describing with her family there about they're narcissistic people. And they're just toxic, and I'm so glad. And she, like myself, she has tried her best to be the genuine person and let her child have contact with them. It's not worth it. Toxic people like that they stay toxic.
So when so counselling was very good, Mary.
Oh, it's fantastic.
So as you go through it, what was changing within you that made it so good?
I was able to talk to an unbiased party, and that's, I was able to voice my opinion, and she clarified for me that, yes, I wasn't going mad in my own marriage. It wasn't, like as you're speaking about the gaslighting and all that, I couldn't put my finger on it. And this went on for years. And there was drink involved, but I could never put my finger on it until my marriage broke down and I called a halt on it. And I just, my health was suffering.
Yeah.
And that's when I started the counselling. But my counsellor was able to put a name on it.
Yeah.
And it was like it's just narcissistic and it's emotional and it becomes physical. The effect it can have on you, and I was just sitting here having my cup of tea, and I was in tears listening to her because I know the struggle, and she has one, I have three.
Yeah.
And they're just, you do your utmost for them. And it's, I described it to my counsellor, my marriage was like, I was in a boat, and I felt like I was just being tugged. There was an anchor, and that was my ex-husband. And he kept pulling out of the back, and I was struggling to go forward with my children. So I just cut the rope on that, and I'm moving forward. And it sounds like she is too.
Yeah. And it's...
Dave,
yes.
Does it not show the huge chasm between Joanne's behaviour and her Christianity and her family's... The very fact that she was prepared to bring her child under those awful circumstances where the child was taken into the house, she never saw anyone, and she kept doing it until the child, well, presumably she may well still be doing it, but she was doing it when the child was 14 years of age.
Yeah,
she's amazing.
You know, that's absolutely incredible. She's a wonderful woman.
Yeah.
Really,
yeah, I totally
wonderful
agree.
And very, very brave.
Yeah.
Remarkable, yes.
Let me bring Bridget in. Bridget, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. Bridget, or Joanne, I just want to say my heart went out to you when I was listening to your story there, and I had to just send an email. I went through, I separated, and I should say I left my husband in 1983. He was an alcoholic. And I'd been married for 13 years, no children, and I left. And like that, I felt that my family initially weren't supportive. And I, you know, they sort of took his side. And I felt that they thought I brought sort of shame on the family. And it was a horrific time. I was actually suicidal. And I suffered from terrible depression. Later on, I have to say, one of my brothers did say that he regretted that he hadn't been more supportive, and he's always been supportive to me since.
But when you're, but Bridget, just to be clear, when you separated from your husband, who was an alcoholic, your family blamed you.
Yeah, they didn't say that, but that's the impression I got.
Did they shun you?
A bit, yeah. I felt, you know, I was. Maybe not quite as bad as that lady's, but I felt embarrassed, and nobody ever asked me how I felt and how I was. You know, I felt very lonely.
Of course, yeah.
And it was a horrific time, and they only came round, I think, when he got married to somebody else very quickly. He got a foreign divorce and got married, and then I think they realised, oh, we'd better forgive her. So things improved for me then, and he went on to have a child. And I mean, I didn't mind that. That's fine. But I think they realised then that, you know, he didn't waste much time himself. He went, got married again, had a child. And then I think they realised. And I think they knew I'd been through an awful lot with them, you know. And
but Bridget, just this glimpse of the conversation when one brother relented, and how did he describe why the family had taken that position?
I think it's just Irish families and a sort of a hang up, part religious, part everything, you know. And I remember we were driving along, and he did say to me that he wished he'd been more supportive. And I thought that was great, because he's always been supportive since.
Okay.
And I can talk to him about anything. And whereas other members of the family, they never asked me how I was, you know. But, I mean, that's a long time ago now. I'm over it now.
Yeah.
It's horrific.
And Bridget, what would you say to Joanne?
I'd say you just have to live your own life and not to blame yourself. She's not to blame. And to try and get all the support you can and talk about it to people who listen, you know, like counselling or a therapy. Go to a support group. And don't be on your own, you know.
Yeah.
And it's not your fault. Because it leaves you with this horrible guilt. Like, oh, it was horrific. I used to cross the road when I'd meet people I knew. Yeah, across the road.
People you knew rather than the people who were shunning you, so to speak.
Sort of, because I felt they were all talking about me, you know, and everyone knew what happened. And it was awkward because my husband stayed in the house and then I had to go. And I actually never had a home since, you know. I lost my home because nobody supported me to get the proper. And I felt if I had support, I would have done better in the legal settlement. Because when you're depressed and stressed, you don't make good decisions.
And you wanted to get out of it as quick as possible.
Yeah, it was violent as well, you know.
Oh, Bridget, I'm so sorry.
So, but I mean...
You're good now.
I'm happy now. And, you know, I say to Joanne, do not blame yourself. It's not your fault.
Absolutely.
And it's very easy to get depressed, as I did, and feel that you're a bad person. You're not. You're just unfortunate. And to live every day and, you know, try and get support. And I think she's great to come on and talk. My heart went out for her because I could see myself in her.
I just see, Joanne, the images. Thanks, Bridget, and kind regards, Bridget.
Okay, thank you,
and your family. Bye-bye, Bridget. Joanne, just the images you conjured up, there's still your baby on your bike, you cycling off to do your jobs, as well as running a home, as well as trying to get money to pay the 80% of your loan payments, that allowance that went on the rent, the image of the hall door calling to the house, the image of your father in his hospital bed, and then I go back to the initial image you gave me, which was of the note on the table, and you held on to that note from your husband, which said again, what were the words? I'm gone. I'll send money whenever I can.
Yeah, so sorry.
Okay, would you ever write to your mother and father, or would that serve any purpose?
No, I wouldn't, Joe.
No, okay.
I've spoken to my mother.
Okay.
I've never had the courage to speak to my father or to... you know, Joe, it was... When I went back in there, we'd say Mother and Father's Days used to come. I used to hand them the card and pretend that I didn't have time to write in it. But I couldn't write in it, Joe, because to me, there were mothers and fathers going to Mountjoy to live with children that had done a whole lot worse than I did. And I just could not put the words on the card. I bought the card and I bought the present. But to me, the bond was broken. It was never the same. And I did try and speak to my mother and I told her how I was feeling about things, how I felt. Sure, it made absolutely no difference.
Okay.
I was told it was all... that was all in my head, you know. My mother will never accept that anything she ever did was wrong. She's never been wrong in her life.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you did everything right. Joanne, your daughter now, how is her understanding of it as she gets older?
The final, you know, she struggled along on a kind of one wheel with them for a few years, and she went to university, and her first year in university she got a serious illness, and she was in intensive care for 4 or 5 days, and when she came out of it, my mother arrived, her other grandmother, her father's mother, left as soon as my mother arrived, and my daughter referred to her granny, to my mother. My mother said to her, "You mean your father's mother?" She said, "No, I mean my granny."
Yeah.
And that was the end of their relationship. My mother went out and complained to my daughter, to my sisters and brothers. It got back to nieces, to my daughter, that granny was, as the kids would say, bitching about her. And that was the end of their relationship.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, onwards, Joanne. You've had an incredible impact on listeners. Just looking at the feedback there, and you describe your husband as a gorgeous, darling man. I suspect a lot of people would use that for those two words to describe you as well.
And, oh, thank you, Joe.
Who just heard you across the airwaves, and I'm sure people know you.
I haven't heard. You know, that was for. I think it was 3 people that were nice to me. I'm not used to. People have been nice to me, and Thank you. It's been really nice to hear.
And listen, it's been a privilege to hear you, Joanne. And kind regards to you, your daughter, and your husband. And indeed, kind regards to anyone who lives, just to borrow David's phrase earlier on, to anyone who lives the true meaning of Christianity, even they say they're Christians, but which is about love. And even if you perceive, wrongly in a lot of cases, that somebody has done something different, that forgiveness and redemption and reconciliation is part of that. Joanne, kind regards. Thanks again. And to Mary, and to Reverend David Sims, and to Bridget. 51551.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
On joe@rt.ie. We spoke earlier on to Joanna, not her real name, obviously, and another number of other women who contacted us subsequently, about being shunned and the pain and the upset and the hurt that it caused when you're shunned by your own family because of something they perceive as wrong. There was nothing wrong. There was no crime committed, by the way. Joanna had a baby and she didn't happen to be married at that time, and then her husband left her, and then she met 4 years later someone else, and her family took a position on this, which was extraordinarily hurtful, as people heard. Christina, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
You have a similar story, you say, except from a child's point of view. What happened, Christina?
Well, it was many years ago. My parents had married and they were first cousins.
Okay.
And my when I was about six, we'd moved back to Ireland, and I was coming up the road with my mother one day, and this lady was trying to lift me in over the gate, and my mom was kind of holding me back.
Yeah.
And it transpired that this was my granny, my father's mother.
Okay.
And so slowly, I obviously. When my dad came back from England, I used to go to my granny's, and then, you know, she was a lovely woman, and I did ask my mother, you know, why did she not see this lady?
Yeah.
And then she told me, this was later on, that because my parents were first cousins, that my dad's mom had turned against her daughters had turned against my mom. My granny was a lovely woman, but my aunties wouldn't allow me to mention her name when I was visiting them. And
would not allow you to mention your mother's name?
No.
Yeah,
no.
Your mammy's name.
Yeah, my mother's name. And they used to leave, one of them used to leave the room. But it was, of course, when I was older that I did realise how, you know, how sad it was for my mother. And she never once, you know, disrespected them or spoke about them in any bad way, you know.
Yeah.
And but it was like, you know, I would be, you know, taken to their houses and stuff. And even many years later in London, I was at a funeral and I was helping out with the funeral. And one of the aunties said all of a sudden, it's all wrong, you know, we were all set to adopt you. And, of course, I was older then and, you know, I jokingly said, oh, well, my mum didn't do too bad. But it was, I suppose, when that woman spoke, I could feel the pain was for my mother to have been shunned, you know, because of, you know, something that, to be honest, was quite natural, you know.
Yeah, because of someone she fell in love with.
Exactly, yes. You know, that's basically
And one of your mother's sisters said to you, we were supposed to adopt...
My father's sister.
Your father's sister, okay.
Yeah.
We were supposed to adopt you.
Yeah, we were all set to adopt you.
My God.
Yes, so...
I presume it's true, but why say it to you so... So
I did think at the time, and now, because, you know, being and I was older and so on, and so I realised from her point of view that she had never moved on in her life, and it would have been, again, a lot of it would have been to do with the church's teaching.
And did the church, insofar as they can, or did the church, I know things have changed and it's different in different countries, but did the church have a poor view of forced cousins getting married?
And all I know is there had to be a dispensation given at the time. I think it was basically the auntie's relations with the church, her standing in the church that was affected, and so on. And they're standing in the community, I guess. But I could definitely empathise with that lady today from, you know, being as a child, how confusing, I suppose, it was for me. And, you know, so that's why I phoned up. And thank you for taking my call.
Okay. And I see there's no legal restriction, as far as I can see, and I'm only Googling it here, in Irish law on the marriage of first cousins. Because it came up a couple of years ago in the same-sex marriage referendum, and it was brought up. But there's no legal restriction in Irish law on the marriage of first cousins, gay or non-gay, so to speak, same-sex or different sex. And was there any reconciliation later on, Christina?
the only reconciliation came with one of the aunts who in her very late years actually did visit my mum. That was lovely.
Okay.
Thank you.
Your mother sounds an incredible woman, Christina.
Yes.
As you are. Thank you. Look after yourself, Christina. Thanks for contacting us.
Hi.
Thank you so much. I'm a bit late. Apologies. Niamh Hassel produced, and Ray Darcy is next.